So Genesis 29, we see Jacob now leaving home because he's afraid that his brother Esau wants to kill him, and he's traveling to his uncle Laban. So it says in verse 1, Jacob went on his journey. He came to the land of the people of the east. He looked and saw a well in a field. So he's going to come up and see, you know, people gathering these flocks and herds. And in verse 4, Jacob said, "My brethren, where are you from?" "We're from Haran." "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" They said, "We know him." So he's asking about his uncle. That's who he was sent to see. He said, "Is he well?" They said, "He's well. Look, his daughter Rachel is coming." So they tell him in verse 7, he said, "Look." So Jacob's telling him, "Look, it's still high day. It's not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water his sheep and go feed them." Jacob is showing his knowledge of taking care of livestock and how it should be done. But they said, "We can't until all the flocks are gathered together and they've rolled away the stone." There are security reasons for doing that. They would often keep wells covered so they wouldn't be contaminated or they wouldn't be drunk dry by people who shouldn't do it. But while he's speaking with them, in verse 9 it says, Rachel came with her father's sheep. She was a shepherdess. When Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother, Jacob went near and rolled the stone away from the well's mouth and watered the sheep. So some people have thought he's showing off for Rachel, because obviously we're going to learn later that he's rather taken with her. But at this point, he might be showing off for Laban as much, because he wants to be in good with him. And it says he kissed Rachel and lifted his voice. I'm sure this was a kiss of greeting, not that he, you know, laid one on her, so to speak. And he told her that he was his father's relative. He was Rebekah's son. So he reveals who he is, which is a good thing since he's kissing her. And in verse 13, when it came to pass, when Laban heard about the report about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him. So they have this greeting and they get started. And I've wondered sometimes if Laban wasn't in such a hurry, because the last time he met a member of that branch of the family was when the servant came looking for a bride for Isaac and he brought 10 camels load of riches. Unfortunately, Jacob didn't have loads of riches. He was traveling poor. So it goes on from there. Anyways, verse 14, Laban said, "Surely you're my bone and my flesh." So he's still a family member. He welcomes him in. He stayed for a month. And Laban said to Jacob, "Because you're my relative, should you serve me for nothing? Tell me what your wages will be." I find it interesting. Now, I don't know, and we don't really have a good way of knowing for sure if this was the custom back then, but they say in later times, it was a custom with Middle Eastern herdsmen that if they had to extend a hospitality. Someone shows up, you bring them in, you take care of them, give them a place to sleep and eat, and you would do that for up to 3 days. But by the fourth day, the visitor is expected to let you know what his business there is. And then if he stays beyond that, he's expected to join in and work with the family to help earn his keep. So we see Jacob's there. By the time a month has gone by, he probably has started doing that, which would seem natural. Otherwise, if nothing else, he'd get bored just sitting around. I mean, they don't have good cable access or anything like that. So, and probably by this time, he has taken an interest in Rachel, and he's got a good knack for working with livestock. And I would think probably Laban noticed that. Maybe this is why Laban is encouraging this. Or he's expecting what would happen. We're reading on. Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful in form and in appearance. And Jacob loved Rachel. Now, it doesn't say that Leah was ugly, but it's obvious that Jacob is more attracted to Rachel. So Jacob loved Rachel. He said, "I'll serve 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." Laban said, "Better to give her to you than anyone else, so go ahead." As I said, Laban might have been maneuvering Jacob sort of towards this. Because what happened? Yeah? Yeah, I was never interested in marrying any of my cousins, but it would seem weird to us, but apparently it wasn't back then. I don't know what to say, except it seems like earlier on in human history that it wasn't as big a deal, and maybe, you know, the genetics were stronger, that they didn't have to worry about birth defects and such like that. Okay, normally when you get engaged by the marriage, you have to have a dowry. Well, Jacob has come without 10 camel loads of stuff, so he proposes to work it off. So I'll work 7 years. As I said, maybe Laban was expecting this. Hey, he likes Rachel. I want to marry her to somebody that I can trust, and I'm going to get 7 years service. So they arranged probably what would amount to an indentured servitude. It's like a contract. 7 years labor in return for getting the woman. Okay, and indentured servitude isn't something that's common in our society today, but if you go back a couple hundred years, it was common even in American history. A lot of Europeans became indentured servants in order to get their passage over to the United States. So they make that agreement, and Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. They seemed only a few days because of the love he had for her. Always pause there. Now, I don't have a good explanation. I would have thought it might have seemed more like the opposite. You know, when you're engaged and about to get married, it's like, oh, this is taking forever. But, you know, they're he's busy working, they get to spend time together. So Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, my days are fulfilled that I may go into her. Laban gathered the men together, made a feast. Remember, we discussed this with Isaac, it doesn't describe how a wedding was conducted, the marriage ceremony, but something happened. And that evening, he took Leah, his daughter, brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter. And it came to pass in the morning, well, it was Leah. He said to Laban, what have you done? Wasn't it Rachel that I worked for? Laban told Jacob, fulfill her week and we'll give you this one also. So give a week to Leah, who he married that he didn't intend to. If you do that, then we'll give you this one. He could have had a nicer word for his daughter Rachel. And you'll serve with me for another 7 years. So it doesn't mean Jacob would have to wait seven more years to marry Rachel. He gets her after a week, but he's got to serve seven more years after that. Be Leah's husband for a week, and then, you know, after that, Jacob did so, fulfilled her work, hit her week, then he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife. Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel. Jacob went into Rachel and also loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served still with Laban still another 7 years. So we want to be clear, he didn't wait 7 years after he married Leah before he got to marry Rachel. It was a week later. So whereas he had to do the work first and then get one bride, he gets another one a week later and has to pay back, so to speak. Laban got what he wanted. Laban got dowry for both of the girls. And again, we could say he gets them married to someone that he trusts, even though he's deceiving them. Jacob had only willingly paid the price for one and was sort of snookered into the other. It's interesting, this reference to not doing wrong to the firstborn. You know, we don't know for sure if Laban was truthful or not, and Jacob might not have had much way of knowing. But can you imagine, as soon as Laban says, well, we can't do wrong to the firstborn has certain rights, do you imagine that pricking Jacob's conscience a little bit? You know, he did wrong to the firstborn in his family. Remember, he got Esau to sell him the birthright, and then he tricked him out of the blessing. So, you know, Jacob's getting back some of what he got coming. Still, the big question is, okay, how do they pull that off? I mean, I remember when I got married, and I would have noticed if it wasn't Sue. Any thoughts? I'm curious if you've been told or come up with something.
It says there was a wedding feast, and in one translation I read somewhere it said that there was drinking involved.
Okay, that's one on my list. Yeah, these festivities, think about the story of Jesus Christ turning water into wine. Okay, typically it involves drinking wine. So that's one thing that might contribute at least. Yeah, if nothing else, well, I don't want to speculate, but what, anything else? Okay, one speculation, brides perhaps then as now wore veils covering their face. So perhaps when they're doing whatever ceremony it might have been, he might not have been able to see. And if the two girls have enough similarity, they're about the same size and height or whatever, okay, you know, he's going to be presumptuous or presume that it's the one he's intending to marry. Okay, there's some other things we've got to consider must have happened. One is that both Leah and Rachel must have kept their mouths closed. Which, we don't know for sure that Leah wanted to be married to Jacob. Later on, I mean, she is, and it stays that way. I just wonder. But they both kept silent, which makes me think, boy, what kind of dad was Laban? You know, was he so domineering and controlling that he told him, you keep your mouth shut, and they were so used to it that they did? You know, I can't imagine any of you doing that if you were being swapped out with someone else. Okay, probably Laban with, remember, Zilpah is Leah's maid. Perhaps he had Zilpah make sure the tent was kept really dark when they did finally get that time alone. So there might be a number of things. And in the event, they're married and Jacob honors the marriage and stays, you know, married to them, to both daughters. But it does say that Jacob, you know, he loved Rachel more than Leah. Verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb. Okay, that word, it's funny, the old King James says hated. And the word in Hebrew is sane. So, not sane as in not crazy, but sane, which can mean to personally hate someone. So hated is not an incorrect translation for the exact meaning of the word. But Hebrew scholars say that it is not uncommon to use the word to mean indifferent to or to love less than, which reminds us of in the New Testament when Jesus Christ said, if any man wants to follow me, he can't unless he hates his father, mother, sister, brothers. And we often make the explanation there when he says hate, he means love less by comparison. And that seems to be an accurate portrayal of this. There's no indication that Jacob hated Leah, but you know, he didn't love her the way he did Rachel. And God opens Leah's womb. Rachel was barren. Seems that happened, you know, was just built in. So Leah conceived and bore a son. And I'll skim across this, but she starts having children, and she names the sons apparently either to win Jacob's favor or to sort of stick it in Rachel's face, maybe some of both. Reuben, the firstborn, that means, look, a son. Behold, I have a son. Implying that God had, you know, looked on her lowly status and that everyone should look and see that she has a son. And by the way, I don't think I'm telling you something you wouldn't necessarily know. Most Bibles have within their margins, you know, an interpretation of the meaning. Simeon, the secondborn, means hearing or listen, implying that God was listening to her prayers. Then comes Levi. Levi means joined. Joined, implying that she has a bond with Jacob that Rachel doesn't have. So you can imagine how Rachel feels about this time. And then comes Judah, or Yehudi, which means praise. Once again, implying a close relationship with God. Now, it's worth noting, matter of fact, you might want to make a reference in your notes to Exodus 21, verse 10. Now, the law written in Exodus, of course, wasn't codified yet, but it seems that Jacob is fulfilling this. Exodus 21, verse 10, for a man it says, if he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, and her marriage rights. So regardless of how Jacob felt about Leah, he is providing for her, making sure he has food, clothing, and by marriage rights, it means, you know, time in bed. And since she had four kids, it's obvious that he's fulfilling that as well. Okay, it says then at the end of the chapter, it says she stopped bearing. That's not going to be permanent, but okay, it seems like this happens in marriages. There's times when women tend to get pregnant, and some of them just don't again for either a while or forever. Sorry, I went over that pretty quickly. All of them, yes, I can. So, Reuben means behold a son, or see, or look, a son. Like, looky here, I got me a kid. And Simeon means hearing. So one implies look, I got a son, the other was hearing. As I said, implying that God is hearing my prayers, Rachel, and maybe not yours. Levi means joined, like stuck together, bonded. As I said, Leah's pointing out that she has a bond with the husband that Rachel apparently doesn't have. And of course, Judah means praise. Beginning in verse 30, we see Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, and she envied her sister, naturally. So she said, give me children or else I'm going to die. Jacob didn't respond well to that because he's thinking, look, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm doing my part. So he said, am I in the place of God who's withheld from you the fruit of the womb? Which is, I'm glad we don't use that phrase today. It sounds funny. And it always makes me think of underwear because fruit of the loom. But basically saying, look, I'm doing what I can. It's not my fault you can't get pregnant. So Rachel is going to do the same thing that Sarah had done years ago back in Genesis chapter 16, where she said to Abraham, hey, I got this maid, Hagar, go to her and I'll have children by her. So Rachel makes the same suggestion. Here's my maid, Bilhah. Go into her and she will bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her. She gave him to Bilhah, her maid, his wife, and Jacob went into her. She conceived and had a son. Okay. And as we mentioned with Sarah and Hagar, if a woman has this maid servant, it is a servant. So she owns her. She has right to any children that are born. It makes us wonder, perhaps, what she literally says is, when delivery time comes, I'm going to get in the bed and she'll lie between my legs, and so it'll be like I'm having the baby. But I hope that was just a figure of speech, which might well have been, meaning, look, it's as though the baby's coming from me. And I've read some scholars say, no, they really did that. And some say it was an idiom. Yeah, Julia?
It was a few years ago, but my family and I watched a movie about Abraham. And they actually did that in the movie.
Oh, with Hagar.
Mm-hmm, yeah, they did that with Sarai and Hagar.
I hadn't seen that, but I've read accounts, like I said. And there's some, not a heavy debate, because it's not that important a thing. But like as I said, some say, yeah, they really did that. Others suggest, oh, it could have been a figure of speech, but, you know, I don't know. If you have someone in your complete power, yeah, Emily?
Do they also, like, raise them as their own? Like, do they, like, essentially take the child from them and, like, the only thing that they
Well, apparently they would work together, because the one that had the child was the one that's going to have the milk
right.
to feed it. So I imagine they're in one household, which I think this would be kind of uncomfortable, but I think of... I'm not sure if they're still doing it. On cable TV, they had the show about the sister wives and, you know, the polygamy going on. But it seemed like it was a group household. I suspect the baby stayed with the mother and both were under the owner's care, so to speak. Charlie?
That's affirmed with Abraham going into Hagar, and then Hagar seemed to be involved with Ishmael.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, that's a good point. Hagar, when they send Ishmael, first she's going to take him and flee when Sarah's... Oh, before he's born, then she's fleeing. But then when Ishmael leaves, Hagar goes with him. So that's a good indication. Sky?
And kind of go with that. A long time ago, the rich, when they had a child, it didn't stay with the mother itself. They hired a nurse, and the nurse took care of it. And they would see it at different times, but...
Yeah, that's true. That was especially like in Victorian England and times like that. I don't know how much, you know... One culture to another might not have the same practices, but it is possible. There's no reason to think, though, Rachel would say, give me that baby and you get out of here. Because, for one thing, who's going to change the diapers? You might want to have kids, but you like to have someone else to take care of that stuff. At least that's me speculating. Keep in mind, a lot of this is speculation and guesswork. Anyway, so she does, in verse 6, she says, God has judged my case, he's heard my voice, therefore she called his name Dan. So Rachel will copy Leah in giving her sons names to reflect this competition. Dan means judging or judgment. And so she's implying now God is judging in my favor instead of Leah's. Okay, and of course, Bilhah will go on to have another child that Rachel will name Naphtali, or some people pronounce it Naphtali. I guess I grew up saying Naphtali, but Naphtali sounds more likely. And that means my wrestling. And she says, you know, I've been wrestling with my sister and I've prevailed. So she's implying now she's having success. Except Leah also has a maid servant. So, yeah, in verse 9, Leah saw that she'd stopped bearing, so she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob, his wife. And Leah's maid, Zilpah, bore Jacob a son. So, again, there's part of me just looks for humor in every situation. I wonder if Jacob's like, okay, another one. I don't know, but so now he's got four wives, two wives and two concubines. But so Zilpah has a son, and Leah names him Gad, which I've seen two interpretations. If it's two separate words like B-A and then G-A-D, Bagad, could be interpreted as a troop is coming. Meaning Leah say, hey, I got a whole troop worth of kids. Or one word, Bagad, they say could be interpreted as with a troop. Charlie?
In the Old Testament, how did God view polygamy?
It seems that he tolerated it. This is a question that comes up a lot of times, especially when We have people want to come into the church in parts of the world where polygamy is still practiced. I don't believe God never suggests polygamy. He never openly condones it. Matter of fact, this is a point I'm going to make is, I've got it in my notes. We should remember God promised to make a great nation, that Jacob would have many children. We shouldn't jump to the conclusion that therefore he had to have four wives. God could have blessed one wife to have 12 sons if he wanted. I mean, there's families today. If you've ever seen that show with the Duggars, was it 19 kids and counting? That's one man and one woman. They had 19. So let's not assume that because four women were involved in this, that's the only way it could have happened. So again, I don't think God ever condones it or suggests it. And from what we see in the Genesis account and what Christ later citing that, God wanted one man to be with one woman. So, yeah, to make that, it's a good point. It's a question in some cultures, but I think God's word is clear. What's not clear is why he didn't command them not to do it in cases like this. And that I don't have a good answer for. Okay, anyway, so we have Gad. Then Zilpah has a second son named Asher, which means happiness or blessedness. You know, both meanings can be, yes. Gad means a troop comes or with a troop, depending on how. But it has to do with a lot of, you know, I'm having a bunch of kids. You know, look at all my kids. I got a whole troop. It's like, I'm trying to think, at this point she's got a basketball team with a sub, right? So she's doing pretty good. Asher means happiness or blessedness. And then there's this interesting, you see some of the feelings come that existed in this next story. I think it's amusing. In verse 14, Reuben, who's the oldest one out of them, went out in the days of wheat harvest, and he found mandrakes in the field, brought them to his mother Leah. And Rachel said to Leah, well, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. And Leah says, is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you also take away my son's mandrakes? You imagine the tone of voice. And Rachel says, oh, therefore he's going to lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. And Jacob came out of the field, and Leah went out and said, you must come into me. I've hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. I'll stop there because one of the questions that comes up is, what in the world is a mandrake? Or does anybody wonder about that? I think most of my life I thought it had something to do with a type of bird because of drake being a male goose. It is. Isn't that right? But it has nothing to do with that. That's just a coincidence of the sound. The word, the Hebrew is dudaim, D-U-D-A-I-M. And it has something to do with something in a basket. You know. So something that was found putting in a basket, but the word relates more to the basket than what's in it. Likely something that grew that you can eat, maybe some type of fruit or vegetable. I copied something from Adam Clark's commentary because I thought it was a good way to put it. Adam Clark said, learned men have wasted much time and pain trying to figure out what they were. So in the end, we just don't know. And Adam Clark implies it doesn't really matter much. As I said, the story about them is more revealing. You know, Rachel and Leah don't seem to be best friends. And they sort of have that, you know, yeah, sibling rivalry to an extreme. They didn't ask for this situation, by the way. So Leah begins conceiving again, and it does say God opened her womb. So this is a blessing from God. And so the next son she calls Issachar. Issachar, and it relates to compensation for work done. Which she said, you know, basically talked about, I've hired you with my son's mandrakes. Like, I'm hiring you with, and so that's what she names the son. And there, some scholars have suggested that there might be another side to that. Rather than just, I'm hiring you, she might be sort of making a dig at Jacob, like, I've got to pay you to get your attention. But we're not certain about that. Goes on from there to have another son named Zebulun. Zebulun, which means dwelling or a dwelling, with the implication that Jacob should be living with her now because she's had all these sons. Issachar means compensation for work done, or basically getting paid. And these aren't things that you necessarily have to have memorized. As I said, a lot of editions of the Bible have the meaning in the margin. But it's worth seeing it. It's interesting to name someone. Nowadays, we choose a name because we want to honor a family member, or in some cases, a name you heard in a movie or a book that you like, or just something that has meaning to you. But they're naming their children something to reflect this sibling rivalry. Okay, and then last, Leah has a daughter. Dinah comes from the same root word as Dan, which means judgment. Which I used to think it's funny that, actually it took me a while because I thought, oh, names the son and the daughter are almost the same thing. I think, no, it was Bilhah had Dan and Leah has Dinah, so it's not the same mother. Now, Dinah seems to be the only daughter born out of this whole group. And I say seems because much later in Genesis chapter 46 and verse 7, there's a reference to moving with the sons and daughters. There's a plural of daughters there, indicating maybe there were others. And if so, they're not named, I guess, because, you know, generally you give the names of the sons. But if that were the case, why would they name Dinah? Okay, she has a story coming up. That's exactly it. Although I tend to think with all the care about naming the children, like I don't have much thought that Rachel had daughters before this because it says her womb was closed. And with all this attention, I tend to lean towards thinking that Dinah was the only girl, which imagine what she felt like. Boy, talk about being isolated. I mean, I remember when I was young, because my parents were separated, you know, I had a sister and my mother, and at one point we were living with my grandmother. It's like there's three of them and only one of me. Genesis chapter 30, beginning in verse 22. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph, saying, the Lord shall add to me another son. It indicates that Rachel had been unable to have kids, and now God listens and you could say heals her or just intervenes to make her able to have children. And that leads to a speculation. Perhaps Rachel hadn't had much of a relationship with God and now does, or has turned to him and become more mature spiritually. That's a big perhaps. So don't, you know, take that as given, but it could be something like that. Anyway, she names the son Joseph, which also has meaning. It means adding, you know, adding one thing to another. Because she's saying, okay, God now has made me fertile, I'm going to have more children. So she names Joseph on the expectation that there's more coming, which turns out to have been a bit presumptuous because she wouldn't have any more until several years later. So even though God gives her a son now, the next one she has, who will be Benjamin, is considered, you know, it's not years and years and years and years, but it's a bit later. Okay, so down to verse 25, it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob came to Laban and said, send me away that I may go to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I've served you, and let me go. You know my service that I've done for you. This seems to be then when Jacob has reached the end of his second term of indenture. He served 7 years, got the two wives, he agreed to serve seven more years. So this is probably after 14 years of indentured servitude. Yeah, somewhere between 7 and 13. Now, and I say maybe go on up to 13 or a bit more, because perhaps the story is, let's tell all about the kids and then get back to the other stuff. But there is an indication that they're having several kids. Remember, it's among four women. So one woman wouldn't have 12 kids in 7 years, unless she had several sets of twins or triplets. But just think, it might have been quite a busy household with all those babies and toddlers running around, or babies wouldn't be running around, but makes me wonder, no wonder Jacob spent so much time out in the field. But I say that being facetious and in jest. I still remember, yeah, when we first brought Connor home and we'd take turns on the feeding. Of course, Sue did most of it because he was breastfed, but she, you know, we'd have some bottled milk. I'm trying to think, I would usually do the 2 or 3 a.m. one, And then about, you know, trying to think, it was like about every 2 hours. So about 4 o'clock, she'd get up and feed him so I could sleep a little bit more and then go to work. You got that many, that's just crazy. Anyways, what I want to get back to is, okay, now the term of indenture is up. He's I'm ready to go back home and see my family. Now, what was the reason he left home in the first place?
To get away from his brother and get a wife.
Okay, to get a wife, he's accomplished that. But he's also, remember, he left because he was in fear of his life. Esau wanted to kill him. He must have reasoned, okay, surely he's forgotten by now. I was thinking of this, and of course we'll see it's a major thing in a couple of chapters when Esau and he confront each other. What was it? Empire Strikes Back. You guys, do you remember when Han Solo is about to introduce Leia to Lando Calrissian? And Chewbacca says something that we don't know what it was because we don't understand Chewbaccan. And Han says, well, surely that was a long time ago. Surely he's forgot by now. So maybe this is Jacob. Well, it's been a long time ago. Surely he's forgotten or he's gotten over it. Still, regardless of that, let's give Jacob credit. He's done all this work just to pay for the wives. He hasn't built up any of his own wealth yet. So he's remembering God promised me the promised land. So I need to go back there. It's sort of a leap of faith to say, okay, I'm going to face my brother Esau. I'm going to leave without having much, but a bunch of hungry mouths. So whereas Jacob before was, you know, a bit of a shyster, didn't seem to have a close relationship with God, we're getting to the point where we're going to see him developing a much better relationship and developing faith. So I wanted to drop this here as an indication that he's going that direction. We're not sure how far he's progressed. But Laban has another thought. In verse 27, Laban says, well, please stay if I found favor in your eyes. I've learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. He's saying, Jacob is really good with the cattle. Our flocks are expanding. We're doing great. And a lot of it's because of how good Jacob is. And he says, God has blessed me for your sake. So he says, tell me, name your wages and I'll give it. Jacob said, well, you know how I've served for you and how your livestock was with me. What you had before I came was little and it's increased to a great amount. So they both see that Jacob's the one getting this done. And also that it's a blessing from God. As he says, the Lord has blessed you since my coming. But now, when shall I provide for my own house? So it's like, look, I need to make some treasure for myself. Laban says, what will I give you? And I like the way Jacob does this, once again, indicating some trust in God. Say, you won't give me anything. Implying that he's going to trust God to give him something. So he says, let's pass through the flock today and remove from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, all the brown ones among the lambs, spotted and speckled among the goats. These shall be my wages. So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come when the subject of my wages comes up. Everyone that's not speckled or spotted among the goats or brown among the lambs will be considered if it's stolen if it's with me. And Laban said, oh, that it were according to your word. He's like, this is a great deal. It's worth noting, I've read that in the Middle East, they believe at that time most sheep were white and most goats were black. So a brown sheep or a black sheep was very uncommon. And a light-colored goat, or one of either sheep or goats with streaks or spots, was uncommon. So Jacob is saying, you know, he's saying the thing that happens the least, that's the most unlikely, is what I'm going to rely on to make my wealth. Okay, so they went through and removed them. Verse 35, he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, everyone that had some white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, gave them into the hand of his sons and put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. There's a couple different interpretations of this. One is that, okay, all the ones that are already streaked or speckled or whatever are given to Jacob to start off with, and then it would increase. But that's not really the way I read it. I think it's more likely, it seems, that it's saying Laban took those out and gave them to Laban's sons and sent them away. So whether or not Jacob intended that from the start, but it's going to be even more reliance on God to provide this blessing. Like, there's none of the odd-colored sheep or goats here now. So it's going to take a miracle from God to have any. And yet that is exactly what would happen. Now we'll see. And then Jacob does something that seems odd to us. In verse 37, took for himself rods of green poplar and almond chestnut. He peeled white strips in them. And the rods which he took, he put in the gutters and the watering troughs when the flocks came to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. And they conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face towards the streaked. And he goes on from there. So I don't want to read all of this, but it talks about this, putting these rods in. And when the weaker flocks came in, he didn't do that. And those tended to be Laban's, and the stronger ones he did. There's been a lot of theories and guesses to explain what in the world was he doing with peeling these stripes and these rods. What does it mean? Well, one thing I want to say first off is that it's evident that those did not affect the coloring of the animals, because it clearly says, verses 7 through 9, that God had made the difference. And it's mentioned again later. So God intervenes. It's a miracle that they're coming out with the coloring that they did so they'd belong to Jacob. Now, but still, he's doing this. It must mean something. One speculation is that he puts them in there to keep the animals corralled. Like, the thought is that a lot of animals don't have good depth perception, and so they see this and they think it's uneven ground and they won't go. So he keeps them together, which will accomplish the breeding if one of them's in heat. There's some speculation that the types of wood, put them in the water and some of the sap would leach out, and that did something. It might have induced rutting or lengthened the rutting period. Again, it's speculation. But either way, however it worked, having the healthier ones breed more often would increase the size of the flock. So Jacob does this. He wants the stronger, healthier ones to have more babies because they're likely to be stronger and healthier. But it still relies on God to make them come out the coloring that would make them belong to Jacob. Does that make sense? I feel like I'm spending a lot of time talking about sheep and goats. But this is one of those things that people have questions about, and so you research into it and try to figure out what's going on. As it is, a lot of wealth does accrue. In verse 31, Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he's acquired all this wealth." Oh, so we're going to see Jacob have three good reasons to say it's time for me to head home. Number one is his brothers-in-law are jealous. They're starting to accuse him of wrongdoing. That's a good reason to leave. They don't like me. They're starting to fear that they won't get an inheritance because their dad had had all this wealth. Now their dad's amount of wealth is shrinking while Jacob's is growing. Okay, reason number two, which is coincidentally in verse 2, Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable to him as before. So, okay, the brothers don't like me, or brothers-in-law. Now Laban is unfavorable. Laban isn't so wealthy anymore. He's going to has to lower his standard of living. That's another reason Jacob might be thinking, it's time for me to hit the road. And number three, the third reason, also in verse 3, the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and your family, and I'll be with you." This is by far the most important reason. God tells him, time to go. Remember, 6 years earlier than this, we'll see the number later. Matter of fact, it's in chapter 30, verse 25. Well, the reference to, and we'll see later that it's 6 years earlier. But when Jacob had first suggested to Laban, "Hey, I want to go back to the land of my fathers," it was his idea. There's no indication that then God told him to leave. But now God is saying it's time to go back. So he calls Rachel and Leah in, perhaps in secret, it seems. In verse 4, Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock. Look, I don't want Laban to know about this. As we'll see, he's a little fearful of what Laban will do. So he calls them in to have a consult and see if they're going to agree to this. "So I see your father's countenance. It's not favorable to me as before, but the God of my father has been with me." He's still referring to him as Isaac's God. We're going to see that change later. "You know that with all my might I've served your father. Yet your father has deceived me, changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me." That 10 times might be literal But the Hebrew allows, scholars say it might have just been a colloquialism, like a bunch of times or several times. So we're not sure which. We know he did change. Later it'll be described a bit more. But he says, with all this, God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said, the speckled will be your wages, all the flocks bore speckled. If he said, streaked, they bore streaked. God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. And here we're going to see, indeed, that it was a miracle. In verse 10, it happened at the time when the flocks conceived. I lifted my eyes and I saw in a dream. And he sees them, rams jumping and leaping and the colors. And it says, the angel of God spoke to me, saying, Jacob, here I am. Lift up your eyes now and see all the rams which leap on the flocks. They're streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. I've seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land, and return to the land of your family. This seems to have been only the second time that God appeared and spoke to Jacob. It appears to be, there's no record of another time, so it's significant to at least take note of it. And again, God is telling him, I'm blessing you. It could be inferred, Jacob, stop worrying about doing it yourself. You know, do the right thing and I'll take care of you. That's one of the lessons Jacob has to learn, to stop trying to make things happen himself, you know, especially using improper means, lying and cheating and deceiving. Instead, obey God, do what's right, and it'll be okay. So God commands Jacob to go to Canaan and that he'll protect him. I say, maybe we should stop. We're in the middle of a chapter, but I just turned my page.